This is the Rufus Project. It's free. It's like three podcasts for the price of one. Even though all three would still be free, never mind. You know what? We love bringing you this podcast for free, and we can keep doing that if it's just a little bit of extra help from you as well. How can you help? So glad you asked. First up, find the Rufus Project on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube, on Ustream. Head to our homepage, therufusproject.podomatic.com, and share us on social media. The more people that find out, the more people that listen, the more follows we get, the more we can give you guys. Oh yeah. Don't want to share the entire thing? Maybe if we bring out something that you like or one of our competitions you think would appeal to others. Share us around for that reason. If you don't want to share and would like to give us something a little bit more substantial, if you head to that homepage, therufusproject.podomatic.com, you can hit the donate button and throw a few dollars our way. Want something material for your dollars? We've got you covered there too. We have a Spreadshirt store, therufusproject.spreadshirt.com.au. Here you can find a fine selection of men's, women's and kids' shirts with a grand total of one design, but you can pick your colour. We've also got the recent addition of the Rufus Project beverage dispenser. That's right, a coffee mug with our unofficial and public domain logo prominently on the side. You know you want it, go get it. Finally, yep, I'm going to pimp myself out. If you have a product or service that you would like us to talk about in this very advertising section that I'm putting in at the very front of the podcast, let us know. You can get in touch with us by email at rufusreviews.gmail.com. We definitely would love to hear from you, and we look forward to any support you can give us. Thanks a lot. Now on with this podcast. Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project, your fortnightly podcast to all things geeky. And when we say geeky, we have a very broad definition of geek. Movie, music, games, all sorts of stuff. Basically, whatever has got our interest or whoever we find interesting to talk about. I am your host, Trevor Holland, and I will be joined in the very, very near future by my good friend and king of cult cinema in Brisbane, Christian Fletcher. But hey, what do we have for you in this podcast? Well, we have got some very revolutionary things that we're talking about. I have a look at a game that changed the gaming landscape. Christian has a little bit of a feature about a director who is vastly influential to movie makers right up to the modern day. We have a look at a movie sequel that didn't so much change things or reform things. No, pretty much show that sometimes things start bad and stay bad. But you never know, could we find any redeeming features? And of course, we've got the geek news for you, upcoming events, and an awesome, awesome competition. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the podcast. Okay, for the last few podcasts, I've been talking pretty extensively about the data retention plan in Australia. Now look, I'm not going to go into that too much this time around. Suffice to say, there are so many opponents to this scheme, from the co-founder of Wikipedia right through to the heads of Australian TV stations. Nobody but the government seems to like it, and even the government themselves, one of the main ministers, Malcolm Turnbull, has come out saying how much he enjoys using a service called Wicca, an over-the-top encrypted messaging service that will completely bypass any data retention requirements. Funny that. The only thing I will report on in detail about it, though, is the fact that since this announcement has been made, Australians searching Google for VPN services has increased. I mean, really, between data retention and the proposed three strikes policy that is on the table at the moment, is it any wonder that Australians looking at how VPNs work and how to set them up has absolutely skyrocketed? Waste of money, government! Now on to more fun news. It's finally been confirmed. Netflix is launching in Australia on March 24th. And on top of that, iiNet was the first out of the gate to announce that they were going to offer Netflix quota-free to their customers. Nicely done. And that includes all the current ISPs under the iiNet umbrella that still trade under their own names, like WestNet, Internode, I believe Adam's in there too, all nicely quota-free for fixed-line internet. Sorry for you mobile guys out there, you're still missing out. Optus has also followed suit, confirming that they also will be providing Netflix quota-free. In response, Stan, the new kid on the block in Australia, is pushing its content and trying to get a lot more stuff on there. And Foxtel Presto has now finally set up officially a 30-day trial. Too late, guys. Your service is crap. Other ways that Foxtel's trying to lure you into their services? Well, it's just been announced that Foxtel will not just be fast-tracking Game of Thrones Season 5 this year. They will be broadcasting it simultaneously with the US broadcast. So that's like 10 a.m. in the morning here on a Monday. It is impressive that they are doing this. It still is a problem because, frankly, unless you have an alternative lifestyle, you're probably at work at that time, so it makes no difference. Of course, though, you also still need to be locked into a Foxtel contract with the required additional package to see Game of Thrones. So that's a lot more expensive than any other of the services. In celebratory news of the last fortnight, March 4th saw the 15th birthday of the PlayStation 2. Now, this is a console that really pushed the envelope and changed the console landscape. It's the influence of this console is still seen today, even in non-Sony products. So, PlayStation 2, happy birthday to you. And yes, I did say happy birthday to my PlayStation 2 console on the day. While we're on a gaming bent, I'm sure you've heard my rants about how bad the classification system is in Australia when it comes to games. But every now and then, something comes along to show that we don't really have it all that bad. So what's happened is over in Turkey, the Turkish ministry has begun a probe to investigate whether or not Minecraft should be banned. Apparently there is some concerns that because children can build stuff and then have to actually fight off monsters to protect their buildings, that this could lead to children being cruel to animals. Bit of a long reach there, guys, and I kind of think that maybe if kids are cruel to animals, you might want to look at more than just what they're playing on their gaming devices. Never ever ends. Speaking of never ending, now I'm sure many of you have heard of the proposed all-female Ghostbusters reboot, and you know what? I mean, there's been a bit of talk out there and there's a bit of negative feeling about that, but you know what? I was willing to give it a shot. I was thinking, look, if they respect the source material and produce a fun movie, then I'm in there. Really, more Ghostbusters. Who can complain? Well, I'm starting to lose hope. because in addition to that Ghostbusters movie, Sony will also be making an all-male Ghostbuster team movie, which is apparently going to be the basis of a whole expanded Ghostbusters cinematic TV merchandising universe. Can we not do this, please? Sony, okay, just think about what you're doing here. Please, please, take it easy. Get a good movie out before you worry about any other stuff. You really are making me feel very uncomfortable about the future of the Ghostbusters franchise. At least I will always have Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2 to go back to get my fix. And finally, in other movie news that is making me cautiously optimistic and just a little bit of excited, it has been confirmed that Zoolander 2 will be being released in the US in February 2016. Woohoo! He's hoping that it is actually a good follow-up to the classic movie Zoolander. Both Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson are returning as Derek Zoolander and Hansel. He's so hot right now. And I do find that when these two team together, it does usually end up in a bit of fun. So fingers crossed that this is going to be a good follow-up. Please, I'm already almost about to burst into tears over Ghostbusters. Don't make me burst into tears about Zoolander. And that's the news. This game you must play, I really probably should have mentioned this earlier. It is very much responsible for one of the earliest titles that I have mentioned when I started doing this particular little thing, I suppose you can call it. And there is a little bit of a debate whether or not the original game, released all the way back in 1998, is more influential. But I think the fact that it took 16 years for that game's sequel to top it pretty much shows that the game you must play is Half-Life 2. Not 1, 2. You should still play Half-Life 1, but Half-Life 2 really did improve on the formula. Half-Life 2 really took what the original game did and just expanded on it. It is so immersive. You play as Gordon Freeman and everything happens within the game, with you still remaining in full control of the character. So there's no cutscene, you don't have the control taken away from you. You are always inside this character seeing what's going on. Added to the fact that Gordon Freeman doesn't say a word. What you know of him is what you see from the impressions and reactions of the other characters in the game. It is truly masterful storytelling within a game, and frankly, I do not think it's been matched since. It's got a very deep, engaging storyline, and the supporting cast is all incredibly well portrayed. Special mention must go to Alex Vance, who is your companion through a lot of this game. She really is one of the iconic female characters. She may not take the lead role, but she certainly influences a lot of what's going on. And extra surprisingly for a video game, she's realistically proportioned. It's quite incredible. Now, Half-Life 2 is a first-person shooter, and while you have your standard fare of shotguns, assault rifles, automatic machine guns, again, this is another thing where there is something that makes it stand out. And that is the zero-point energy field manipulator, or better known as the gravity gun. This is one of the big game changers. A gun that doesn't actually fire bullets. What it does, it lets you pick up and fling objects, giving you quite a physics-based puzzle element to a lot of this game. You can use it to pick up heavy things to shield yourself from gunfire, or there's handy gas bottles around that you can fling for explosive effects, saw blades, all sorts of wonderful things to take on the bad guys, the Combine, as you progress through the story. It's not all rosy. There are a couple of vehicle sections. While being initially quite fun, they do go on a bit too long. First in an airboat, mind you, that itself has some spectacular moments, and then later in basically a dune buggy. It definitely probably could have been a good thing if they'd trimmed those sections down a bit. Like I said, a bit draggy, but still fun. Now, Half-Life 2 spawned two semi-follow-ups, Half-Life 2 Episodes 1 and 2, which just do continue the story. Now, this, we do now have to come to the biggest frustration of the Half-Life series. You see, Half-Life 2 Episode 2 was released in 2007, and definitely left story to tell. Fans have been screaming for either Episode 3 or just a full-on Half-Life 3 ever since. Now, when you consider it took 16 years to make a full sequel to Half-Life 1, I think that means we shouldn't be holding our breaths, but it would be very, very nice to be able to finish the story. Valve, Gabe Newell, are you listening? We want to finish the story. Is that too much to ask? Okay, fine, I know, it's a big job. I do appreciate that. Just please make it good, and please make it as soon as you can. So there you go. Half-Life 2 is definitely a game you must play. Do you have your own thoughts? Do you disagree with me? Is there nothing but Half-Life 2 that you think is just makes it a pile of steaming, smelly stuff? I want to hear what you think. Also, if you think of a game that can be included in this category, I'd love to hear about that too. I have plenty of games that I'm thinking of, but I may have forgotten one. Or maybe you can introduce me to something new. All the contact details are going to be at the end of the podcast, so think about it in the meantime, and if you do have something, definitely, definitely, definitely let me know. Thanks a lot.
Welcome to City 17. You have chosen or been chosen to relocate to one of our finest remaining urban centers.
Attention, this town detected your block. Cooperation 7 4 Rational Reward.
They're showing us! Run for your life!
Recently at New Globe Theatre, we ran a mini John Waters film retrospective to get in early and celebrate Divine's 70th birthday. And with John Waters' birthday coming up next month, wedged right between, I thought it would be great to be able to do a feature about one of my favourite directors, a gentleman who I've been lucky enough to meet twice and continues to inspire me to this day. John Waters' background. Now imagine a man who would make movies in his backyard with his group of friends, almost like what a lot of people are now doing on YouTube. This is how John Waters made his start, with some very cheaply made 16mm films, starring his muse and friend, Divine, a 300-pound female impersonator, who would play the lead in a lot of his films. After sharing these movies with the local community and trying to cut into the midnight scene in New York, New Line Cinema actually approached John Waters and said, "Hey, come back with something a lot more polished, possibly in colour, that would appeal to the midnight audiences." John Waters went away and in 1972 came back with the very colourful and very disgusting Pink Flamingos. Described as one of the most vile, stupid and repulsive films ever made, it is also one of the funniest movies you will ever see. It was through this that we were able to see John Waters' trademark filmmaking techniques. They seemed to permeate through the films of John Waters, and pretty much they are the heroes. He represented people from the underground, and his films, whilst an exercise in bad taste, and be something a little bit different. John Waters continued after Pink Flamingos with possibly one of his favourite and a big fan favourite, which was Female Trouble from 1974, also starring Divine. Divine's star was starting to rise, becoming a big cult movie star, and I believe when they were making Desperate Living in 1977, she was off doing work in a play, in a production, which meant that the roles went to some other some other of his Dreamlanders, which is another name for his group of misfits that used to hang around him. And a lot of them are still appearing in his films to this day. Whilst not necessarily a mainstream film, Polyester starring Divine and 50s teen heartthrob Tab Hunter, which came out in 1981, interestingly, in Smell-O-Vision, which with scratch and sniff cards, see, John Waters was probably the first one to do something like that. This kind of was a soap opera, still in the style of John Waters, but you could see he was still trying to touch on the mainstream, and his films were getting a lot more recognition by this stage. He did have a break from 1981 right through till 1988, because that was actually probably a good way to signify his new period, which was Hairspray in 1988. Now, most people would know Hairspray as being the Broadway musical and the 2007 film starring John Travolta. However, Hairspray was originally a John Waters film from 1988, starring Ricky Lake, Divine, Debbie Harry, and Sonny Bono. Wow, what a cast list. Rated only PG, it was actually the first John Waters film to be rated so. However, it still had some of his touches in it, but was a lot more family-friendly, and as a result, went very, very well, especially in the video rental circuit. Into the 90s, he'd released films like Crybaby with Johnny Depp, which was very much a 50s version of Hairspray, and featured another famous cast list with Iggy Pop, Ricky Lake, Joe D'Alessandro, and many more. There were more features like Serial Mum, Cecil B. Demented, Pecker, which was probably one of his weaker/tamer movies. And then in 2004, his last film to ever give us, which was A Dirty Shame, starring Johnny Knoxville and Tracy Ullman. Since then, John Waters has been touring around the world with his show This Filthy World, Parts 1 and 2, which he discusses his life as a filmmaker, his loves, and his obsession with celebrity. He is one of the funniest people you could see live, and he's not a comedian. It's just great being able to hear stories from all his previous work and him talk about behind the scenes working with some of these great people, such as Divine. I was fortunate enough to meet John Waters in 2010. I'd been doing a lot of screenings and was phoned up the day of the event from the venue saying, John Waters has requested you to come backstage after the show. Wow, what an experience. The second time he came around, I wasn't invited backstage. There wasn't an option to do that. There was just a queue that went for a mile long, and I was the last person standing in it. So I must admit, my very first experience meeting John Waters was, you know, was divine. Now, in terms of recommendations, it was a very hard choice because he is one of my favourite directors and he has got such a great back catalogue of films, also unique in there, but still possessing that John Waters style. So in recommendation, and in particular order, we're looking at the top five movies. Coming in at number five is Serial Mum from 1994, which stars Kathleen Turner and Ricky Lake. At number four, we have Female Trouble from 1974. Number three is the original Hairspray from 1988. Crybaby at number two from 1990, starring Johnny Depp and Amy Locane. And number one is possibly my favourite John Waters movie, and the one that he will always be remembered for, which was Pink Flamingos. So go on, get yourself out and see a John Waters movie. And if you've seen more of the recent ones, go back and see some of the ones from Phase One, when he was a little dirtier, but still oh so funny.
Yes? Miss Babs Johnson?
Yes, I'm Babs Johnson.
Special delivery package, ma'am. Sign here, please.
What do you mean, special delivery package? There's no address here.
It says right here, Babs Johnson, a trailer, Phoenix, Maryland. And you are Babs Johnson, aren't you?
Of course I'm Babs Johnson. I just told you that. But there is no address here. This is not on any road, route, or street. And I don't want people on my property. So don't ever bring mail here again. Do you understand? And the next package you bring me is getting shoved right up your little ass. Can you comprehend that?
I understand.
Now you've received some new training, as you call it, and you'd better remember it. So you have exactly 15 seconds to get off of my property, mother, before I break your goddamn neck. 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000, 4-1,000. Run, you bastard, run!
Okay, well, if you all remember, last time I laid down the challenge, I guess, I approached Christian and said that we should watch Blood Rain 2, the sequel to my least favourite redeeming features movie from last year, and also our first video game-based movie of the year that we had a look at. Now, it's a bit hard to say where to start with this, but I probably should start by saying, hey, Christian, it looks like you survived watching this movie, at least.
Oh, yes, definitely. And a thing I should point out to the listeners, too, is I actually haven't seen the first movie, so I think the award actually should go to you, Trevor, for getting through 1 and 2, 3 hours of, I don't know what you'd call it. So well done to you. But, yeah, number two was definitely a mean feat. But I do know that Trevor has been speaking to those of you who do listen to the podcast regularly. Trevor has been, I suppose, bad-mouthing, I suppose is probably the word, Blood Rain for the last year and a half, the first movie. And, so seeing the second one, I am interested to see Trevor. Has, I suppose, I'll launch in with probably a question that's been on the tip of my tongue for a couple of weeks now. Is this movie better than the first one? Is this something that you enjoyed more? Should it be seen on its own sort of merit? And I kind of want to hear sort of what you think and maybe launch in with a bit of a background on it. Because I'm going in a completely cold. I know nothing. You said video game adaptation. I think I loosely saw that written somewhere on Wikipedia. And aside from that, I really know nothing else. So you've got that advantage, but I sometimes think that might not be a good advantage, though, in the term of this series. So I'll let you introduce Trevor.
Sure thing. Well, well, Blood Rain 2, Deliverance, sees a bit of a different setting. The first Blood Rain was set in medieval times. I will go in a bit more into the differences between the two movies because the differences are quite startling. To give you a bit of a idea, the original Blood Rain manages a big 2.8 out of 10 on IMDb, and Blood Rain Deliverance goes down to 2.6. Saying that, I actually think Blood Rain Deliverance is a more watchable movie. This was the first time I've watched it all the way through, mainly because it's pretty boring. Whereas the first movie is just gratuitous in every way. I mean, you've got gratuitous violence, gratuitous nudity, sex, language. Anything that can be gratuitous in a movie is gratuitous. It sounds like I'm selling it, but I'm honestly not selling it. So even without that gratuitousness, Blood Rain 2 is still an easier movie to watch.
And well, I think, Trevor, that the reason it's so easy is because not really much happens. If you really break down, and I'm a big sort of, I don't know, I tend to do this probably subconsciously more than anything, break down a movie in my mind and sort of say, you know, what actually happened in that hour and a half? And I found that Blood Rain 2, I don't know if they were supposed to be stretching out to fill a certain running time, but it just felt like, oh, it was just dragging and so boring and not really much happened. But actually, no, dragging is probably not the word. It didn't drag to the extent of, say, previous movies we've done, like Two of a Kind, which was hideous. You know, this was sort of one of the, you sort of go, well, yeah, when you break it down, not much happens. But, Trev, not coming in from the angle of seeing the first movie and not knowing anything about the video game, is Blood Rain 2, you know, a representation of the video game? That's probably the question I've got for you, because I sort of feel like I'm missing out on half of, is this an in-joke? Should I know half of what's happening? So that's probably the big confusion I had with this movie.
Yeah, well, it really, aside from the title, it pretty much has nothing to do with the game itself. The title character is there. That's about the only connection, really. And I probably should say the actual video game is actually enjoyable to play.
And why did this movie have to ruin it, though? And from what I've read on IMDb, there's even a new actress for the second film. I don't know, is she supposed to be playing the same character? Because her name's Rain, but I was a bit confused about that, too. You know, they're obviously supposed to be the same character, and I'm assuming she's the main sort of character in, or she's the person who's the player in the video game? I don't know.
Yeah. So it is the same character. I actually did do a bit of reading up before, and the reason that the original actress, who was it? Kristana Loken, who people may know as the female Terminator from Terminator 3.
Oh, interesting.
She's also appeared in TV series like The L Word. She's actually a halfway decent actress, which is another thing I can touch upon a bit later on with regards to the first movie. But the only reason she said no wasn't because she didn't want to go back to this horrible franchise. It was because that she actually was getting that TV work at the time, apparently. So, and then, yeah, along comes Natasha Molte, who herself has a bit of a range. Funnily enough, in movies like this, she actually plays one of the characters in Dead or Alive, which is another computer game-based movie that is one of my guilty pleasures. And she but was
keeping,
in the...
She's keeping the theme going by the sound of it then.
She was a bad guy in the really, really, really bad Daredevil movie that was done a few years back.
Oh, okay. She sort of has that real Olivia, you know who I mean by Olivia Wilde? She sort of has that kind of fit, like... a kind of look about her, you know, very, and I probably have seen her in other things before because she looks, you know, slightly familiar, but here was me thinking it was the first actress just reading the script and going, oh God, I'm not coming back. So interesting that she was getting the TV work, which probably was a wiser career move.
Well, while we're on the actresses, and of course what I've done is, well, you're going to hear our opinion of this and you're going to hear our thoughts, but you know what? There are people out there that did enjoy this movie. And I've got this little review here by Doc Savage is the username. And he says, they said no film based on the Blood Rain video game could ever surpass the original Blood Rain released in 2006. They said no actress could ever top Christina Loken's unique performance in that film. Well, little did they know that Blood Rain 2 would come along. Everything you loved about the original Blood Rain is repeated here. Only more so. Except the very hot Christina Loken has now been replaced by the even hotter Natasha Molte. All you need to do is Google some photographs of these actresses. And not only can you see how hot they are, you can even see the complete extent of their acting abilities. Flat stomachs with toned abs, large breasts, pretty faces, tight butts. In all caps, now that's what I call that. Now that's what acting is all about. And did I mention this was based on a video game? Wow. That's a 5-star review there. I wonder what he was focusing on.
Yes, I have a feeling he kind of liked the actresses in that. Just a bit of a hint.
Gosh. Yeah.
But then, as you were reading that, it kind of it halved on a note that I've got here about the film, and it was very much his review, and a lot of the reviews you have been reading out recently have almost that tongue-in-cheek feel about you. Like, are these honestly, are they serious? But I don't know. There seemed to be, I think I sort of cottoned onto it about halfway through the movie. I cottoned onto this feeling that, is this just a really bad movie, or are they just being really tongue-in-cheek? You know, I'd hear all these, and I didn't quite take note of them at first, but sort of later in the movie, you notice these sort of, they'd come out with witty one-liners. I can't think of them offhand, you know, but, you know, I don't know, Rain would stab someone and then go, gee, it hasn't been your day, has it? You know, something along those sort of lines. And you sort of got the feeling, you know, is it supposed to be tongue-in-cheek? Were they going for the whole angle of so bad it's good? So I don't know. So it's interesting. That was one thing I noticed while watching it. You know, was it self-aware or is it just a bad movie?
I think saying that it's self-aware, particularly with the fact that it was directed by one Uwe Boll, who was the director of the first movie, I don't know how you can describe his career. He is infamously bad for making bad movies, often involving video game adaptations. He really is in it just to cash in on the titles. I believe that is pretty much the cornerstone and the backbone of his career as a director.
Oh, well, it sounds, because I know you've spoken to me about him before, and I'm not familiar with any of his other sort of things. Actually, I may have seen them, but, you know, from what you've told me, this film, I could see it being done by him, but does he usually have more of a sort of gorier angle? Because I saw that, you know, there were some scenes in Blood Rain 2 that sort of felt a bit quite, not overly gory as such, but sort of where you kind of go, oh, that's a bit much, you know, and I sort of, you know, has he got more of a background in that sort of stuff?
Well, if you look at, say, the violence in and the gore in Blood Rain 2, I think it's quite noticeable at times where you see her swinging the swords, but it's angled so you don't see them connecting. And then suddenly you've got a cut over to someone who's, bleeding from this cut across the thing. Whereas in the first Blood Rain, they had gratuitous shots of people's heads being crushed with brain oozing out. So,
oh my god! Whereas I think the worst thing you get in number two was they slit the guy's throat near the end. You know, and that was probably the sort of the worst sort of obvious sort of one where you're seeing contact. But yeah, so oh god, Trevor, you're kind of selling me on seeing the first one now, which is probably not a good thing. I kind of do want to compare them because I feel like I'm going in so blind, feeling like I've missed so much. Because it's funny, the first, from the moment the, not knowing anything about it, from the moment the movie starts, I'm like, what has Trevor suggested I watch? You know, we're pretty much going into vampire cowboy western territory, but at the same time it I don't know if this is me being weird, but it kind of had this feel of being almost an Amish sort of movie at the start. I'm like, what is this going to be? and it really just sort of led into just a whole heap of quite interesting scenes. And I've got a couple of notes here too, but I don't know if I'm going off on a tangent, but just a couple of little things where I noticed little things like a cowboy slaps a bartender's face, and I noticed he actually, instead of falling away from him, falls towards the camera. That was about 13 minutes into the film. And just a couple of things like that happened, and that's when I started to get this feel that, is this supposed to be tongue-in-cheek? But I think it may have been technical issues.
I think it was just straight-out bad acting.
Yeah, I think that's true, you know, and a lot of, like, I did after watching the movie, looked at a few reviews too, and, you know, aside from our doctor, whoever his name was, that raved about the film, most of the reviews were saying, you know, the acting was terrible. And really, the whole flat-out boring was what I came across a lot, and I pretty much believed it too, and it felt like they really didn't have enough sort of to keep it going. And the thing sort of scares me is there's a Blood Rain 3. Gosh, you know, talk about, you know, spreading a concept even, you know, thinner. But yeah, no, there's definitely some interesting things happening in it. Like there's, I found that it's interesting, like a lot of horror films don't tend to show sort of children being murdered or anything bad sort of happening to kids. But the big thing about this is they're keeping the kids hostage in a basement as sort of, I suppose, leftovers, potentially food, you know, for these vampires. And there's one scene where he brings one of the girls over onto his laps and lap her, and she's screaming, and he calms her down, then to bite into her neck. And I found that scene quite, oh my god, like, really, you know, usually kids are sacred in these sort of movies, but they still they didn't hold back. So that was sort of one thing that stood out to me. So I don't know if that was a U-Bowl type signature move to have that in there.
I think he basically would throw in anything just for the shock factor. I mean, and that is a good point that you don't normally see in even some of the most nasty and horrible of horror movies is actual, you know, kids being, well, in this case, being eaten. There's another scene where a kid fairly blatantly, you see them hanging until they die. And then Billy the Kid comes over and drains them anyway. So that is probably, I guess, something which does stand out. And you do wonder how many of these kid actors, you know, had to have therapy after they appeared in this movie.
Hey, we're just going to film that scene where you're hanging for the next 8 hours. But and there was even sort of, I don't know, I thought this was kind of a little kind of quirky little thing. But even when the kids, you know, not to give away the ending, ladies and gentlemen, but let's just say, when some of the kids are reunited with their parents, let's just say, the first thing the parents do instead of hugging them is check their necks. I thought that was a cute touch, actually. So
I didn't notice that. You just...
Yeah, I had a bit of a chuckle, you know. Actually, a cute touch is probably not the right word, but I had a bit of a giggle because I'm thinking, you know, well, technically in that world, that's what these parents are fearing. Have they drained blood from our children? So, but from the looks of it, I don't think they're usually alive to tell the tale anyway. So. But there's definitely some interesting one-liners there and interesting things happening in it. You know, I've got in my notes here, did I just hear one of them actually say Jesus Christ, or was I imagining it? I actually think that one of the characters said that at some stage.
Yeah, they did. There were some very interesting one-liners and very interesting combinations of
of, shall we say, their curse words. and some of the, yeah, and some of the things that they called each other as well, again, it kind of all blurs together, but, there was like just some very interestingly creative insults, I suppose, based in that Wild West. Oh, you cur, you dog! But with, some more, modern, shall we say, sexual references added on top, just to, I suppose, give you the full picture.
Well, I even forced me to Google sort of, you know, when the, what the period of the movie was actually set in. And it was set in the 1880s because it kind of set up this whole, you know, and being from a video game, you know, it existed very much in its own world. But I was interested to see that it was supposed to be set in 1880, and the dialogue definitely didn't fit that very much. But probably one of the disturbing scenes for me, aside from the girl having her neck sucked, was probably the priest filling himself up during the sermon. We do find out afterwards, though, that the priest is a bit of a shady character anyway, bit being a, you know, not quite the right word, but I felt that quite disturbing as well. And it kind of, and, you know, there was a scene where, you know, that there's a collection and he tips over an old lady's purse and just tips all the money into it. But then we soon find out that his character is like that. But, you know, from the start, I was quite, oh, okay, this is a bit of a strange scene. That whole sermon kind of scared me a bit.
Yeah. Oh, tell you the truth, that scene was probably the scene I found the most interesting because it's the closest anyone really got to acting in the entire movie.
It was almost like they gave him this monologue scene, almost sort of, oh, let's give this movie one last chance to kind of redeem itself. And, yeah, it was an interesting, it just sort of came at a time when I was sort of going, what else is going to happen? So I, yeah, but it is interesting, you know, where they used it in the film. But, you know, there's so many, we were talking about, you know, wee one-liners, but probably the one that stood out to me was the final scene where they're almost spoofing Casablanca. You know, the final scene in Casablanca where Humphrey Bogart and Claude Rains are walking away from the camera. You know, this is the start of a beautiful friendship, you know, and instead, you know, they're walking away from the camera and the gentleman makes the analogy, life is like a penis. When it's hard, you get screwed. When it's soft, you can't beat it. And I'm like, oh, wow, what a way to pay homage to Casablanca.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe. So that was very much, you know, seeing that scene was very much me going, ah, you know, they are very, this is supposed to be tongue-in-cheek. So, you know, to add things like that in, hey, it could have just been, you know, I'm sure there's thousands of movies that have people walking away from the camera and you know, in the final shot. But things that just seem such an obvious homage to a movie, you go, you know, maybe they were smarter than they were giving off.
I think you may just be giving them a bit too much credit.
Definitely. But whilst talking about credit, I thought it was really interesting, Trevor, to bring up, you know, possibly one of the worst moneymakers/budgets ever from a film. You know, we usually talk about some really bad movies and, you know, they kind of just miss the mark. Believe it or not, Blood Rain 2 actually had a budget of $10 million. I am interested to know if anyone can tell me where that money is on screen. I'd love to know. And so for a budget of $10 million, and it made in total from box office, actually, no, sorry, it was direct to DVD, so it's made from sales, $167,000 back. So a very good investment for the filmmakers there.
Yeah, but I think there's something to do with the tax laws over there. I think like he can make a loss but still come out on top.
Oh god, but it sounds like if he's a guy who made a living out of making these sort of movies, I can understand he's worked out a way to win the system over, let's just say that. But hey, it's caused us to watch it, so damn you. Damn you, director. but yeah, I would be interested to see number 3. I will not attempt it. I hope you will not suggest it. But yes, it would be interesting to see how they continue it on, because really there wasn't much story, hardly any story at all in the second film. So
number,
really,
number 3, she takes on vampire Nazis.
Oh, that's always so a bit of Nazi exploitation. It's always good. So, but yeah, at the same time, Trevor, I'm not encouraging us to watch this anytime soon.
We'll get there. Let's face it, we'll get there eventually.
So I suppose the big question is, do you find that Blood Rain 2 Deliverance is redeemable in any way?
Well, I'll probably just cover some of the things I found interesting about it before I go on to the actual
Whether or not it's redeeming, not that I think anyone's going to find it too hard to guess what that answer's going to be. But one thing I found very interesting about it was just the acceptance of everything. Like, Rain escapes from being hung from the gallows at high midnight. Not high noon, high midnight. And it's the next morning, she meets up with one of the guys who ends up being the sidekick, and she's just going, I need blood! I need human blood! And it's like, okay then, opens a vein. You're not a vampire, are you? Oh, half human, half vampire. Oh, okay then. And then they're going around, they're getting together the preacher guy and the other guy who I don't even know what he was meant to be other than some dude who hung around brothels.
Yeah, I got confused by
that. So. We're going to take out the vampires. Oh, okay then, why don't you say so? And they just wander off and join in and all join the club. Then there was Billy the Kid himself. I probably should have looked up who played him, actually. Not that it really matters. I'm sure he's a well-known name. Zach Ward played Billy the Kid. I had no idea what his accent was meant to be. Kind of just redeemed. I'll tell you, it went back and forth across the place. And he hammed it up so much in his death scene. Jeez. And an almost throwaway line at the end was, you know, what are you going to do now? I'm going to go to Tombstone and take out the vampire family, the Daltons. So the kind of the implication is that all the famous Wild West outlaws were vampires. I don't know if that was
It'd be interesting to say, because as you said in the third one, I don't really see, you know, is it supposed to be her going and fighting? What's she talking about in number two? Probably not.
No.
That weren't that clever.
Yeah. I guess one thing I did like about it was the opening credits, with seeing, like, sepia-tinted photos of the actual Wild West over the Wild West theme, which unfortunately the music seemed to be the only bit of music they had, so they made it work through most of the movie.
Yeah.
I found that quite a nice little opening. It gave you a nice Wild West atmosphere, but that's when it went downhill after that. As I said before, the original movie had gratuitous everything, sex, violence, gore, nudity, mass battle scenes, gratuitously bad acting by actors who should know better, like Sir Ben Kingsley. I don't know why he was in that. No, stop. Bring that back. I go into that. This one had gratuitous shots of horses riding through puddles. So many shots of a close-up of the ground and the hooves coming through and splashing through those puddles. The first time, like I said, it was just so drawn out you couldn't help notice it. And then it happens again and again and again. At the end of the day, technically, you could use this as an example of when the sequel is better than the original. Technically. However, at the end of the day, I would not suggest anyone watch this under any circumstances for any reason, because, frankly, this movie is not redeemable. Christian, what are your thoughts? Anything redeeming from your end?
Well, Trevor, I definitely, you know, I love the comments you just made. I definitely support the irredeemable part. In terms of any sort of giving it any kind of praise whatsoever, or any liking any of the technical aspects, I couldn't even find any sort of enjoyment even in the opening credits. So I think my big thing would have to be definitely irredeemable. And I think coming into it completely blind, especially with, you know, not being aware of the video game or the first movie, I definitely think that proves, for a start, it doesn't work as a standalone movie, but it also makes you sort of, wonder, am I missing out on something here? Should I have a story? Is there a pre-existing storyline? Are these characters that I should already know? So I suppose, you know, in that case too, is definitely irredeemable. And I really just found that, hey, I said it before, you know, where is that $10 million budget? You can't see any of it on screen. And it's just a darkly lit, boring vampire western, and you know, and I'm not a big fan of vampire movies anyway, but this takes the cake as being one of the worst ones of all time. So definitely, Trevor, irredeemable on my end.
Fair enough. I think, yep, there wasn't much doubt I think from not long into this movie that it just was going to be no good. So, of course, if anybody out there disagrees with us and agrees with our friend Doc Savage from Amazon, we definitely want to know why you think this movie is redeemable. Again, all the contact details will be given at the end of the podcast. But what we probably should do now, and since it was your suggestion, Christian, should talk about the next movie we'll be watching and trying to redeem.
Okay, well, Trevor, I thought, well, it seems it's good. I'll throw one into the mix. It will alternate each time. It seems good. But I think I thought it was about time to probably expose you to the 1978, probably obscure cult classic would be the word, Sextet, starring the late Mae West. Now, Mae West being the iconic film actress, and this was actually the last film that she ever released, verging on high camp, high trash, high, I don't know what high the directors were. I'm really interested to see what you have to say about Sextet, because, you know, since choosing it, it's made me realise too, you know, perhaps it's, you know, not a bad film, but it's definitely one I want to get your opinion on, Trevor, and see, you know, does it appeal to someone who doesn't necessarily love 70s camp all the time, which I'm quite a fan of. So I'm interested to see what you think of Sextet from 1978.
I'll give it a shot. I can guarantee that.
Hey, we survived Blood Rain 2. I think anything can happen now.
Could Blood Rain 2 be the worst of the year? Is it too early to call that, or do you think you might find something even worse?
Oh, we might find more, Trevor, but you do realise we haven't seen Blood Rain 3 yet, so before we start bantering around the whole concept of number 2 being the worst, I think we need to see the third. But as I said, I'm not queuing up to do that anytime soon.
I think we need a substantial amount of recovery time first.
Definitely. I think we'd need a year off from the podcast to recover. So, ladies and gentlemen, you will not be hearing number 3 reviewed anytime soon.
No. Maybe say that for next year.
Yes, when it's fresh.
Oh, dear. Okay, well, I think we've wrapped this up pretty well. As always, Christian, it's a wonderful pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Trevor. We'll speak next time.
You better have something interesting to say, mister.
The youngins ain't here. They're in deliverance.
With Billy the Kid and his gang.
Let the children go!
You don't know what you're dealing with.
And that's fair, because neither do they.
In terms of upcoming events, we're excited to bring back the infamous Rocky Horror Picture Show interactive screening, which features a live floor show by local fan Shadowcast Cards for Sorrow, now in their 15th big year. Come along and experience the Rocky Horror Picture Show a way you never have before, with 15 performers bringing the film to life beneath the screen as the movie plays. Tickets are available at the door for $16 per person. This is a 15-plus event, but if you want to get in early, you can book your tickets at www.christianfletcher.com. This is Friday the 20th of March at Chanel Theatre UQ, screening at 8 p.m. Definitely dress up, definitely get a group together, and be prepared to do the time warp again. It's a great experience. To support Teal Soldiers, an ovarian cancer awareness group, we are running a Cinema Shorts charity screening on Wednesday the 25th of March at New Globe Theatre. This will be running from 6:30 till 8:15, an eclectic collection of short films locally produced from all over Brisbane, from all different genres, and these tickets are $15 per person, and it is a fundraiser with all profits going to Teal Soldiers, and this is all going to a great cause. Tickets are available at the door for that, and that's the 25th of March at New Globe Theatre. The Tracks 80s Party returns to Calibre Lounge on Saturday the 11th of April. So mark that date in your calendar now. It's free entry from 7 till 11, playing the best music of the 1980s with DJs Lisa Lectro and Missy Boots. If 90s is more your thing, the following week at New Globe Theatre, we're running a 90s video clip party after the big success of our last one. This is happening on Saturday the 18th of April from 8:30 p.m. For 3.5 hours, see your favourite 90s music videos on the big screen with a licensed bar and, of course, an area to dance. Lots of great events coming, but make sure you keep a lookout for the Doors movie and Reanimator, which are planned to take place in April 2015. For more details about upcoming events, visit www.christianfletcher.com, and I look forward to seeing you soon at an upcoming event.
For this podcast, there really is only one thing we can offer in way of a competition prize, and that is to give you guys a chance to win a double pass to the awesome, the spectacular, the incredible Rocky Horror Picture Show with Cards for Sorrow floor show performance. Absolutely magnificent. Yes, I know I'm in it. I know Christian's in it. I'm not biased. Seriously, it is one fantastic, fun, awesome night out. If you haven't experienced it, I highly recommend it. And if you want to experience it, well then, all you need to do is head to one of our many, 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 many contact places and simply leave the word Rocky. Nice and simple. I will be listing all those contact points in just a moment. So really, make sure that you've got your fishnets ready for Friday, March 20 at the Chanel Cinema, the University of Queensland, St. Lucia, Brisbane. And who knows, you may be lucky enough to be able to go for free. Keep listening. Contact details in just a moment. Thank you so much for listening to The Rufus Project. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed putting it together. And if you would like to leave us some feedback, make a comment, make a request, suggest a redeeming features, movie, or a game that I should play, couldn't be simpler. Simply head to The Rufus Project on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. We're at Rufus Reviews, but you should be able to Google us quite easily anyway. We have a Podomatic page, therufusproject.podomatic.com. We're also on YouTube. All the links are also down below. Couldn't be easier, and of course, you can also use any of those to enter our great competition. We're also very interested in hearing from you. If you are someone, or if you have an event that you think would be a good fit for our local wildlife section, we love talking to other people. We obviously love the sounds of our own voice, but we do still like talking to other people. If you don't feel comfortable leaving an open message or sending a private message through any of the aforementioned places, you can always send us an email to rufusreviews@gmail.com. And if you happen to like us enough to wear us or drink from us, that doesn't sound too good, not as bad as it sounds, head to our Spreadshirt store, therufusproject.spreadshirt.com.au. There is a pattern here. Look, just Google The Rufus Project. We're there, easy to find, it's all good. And finally, the moral of this particular podcast is, don't watch Blood Rain. Ever. It's horrible. The entire series is horrible. Don't do it. You have been warned. Thanks a lot and see you next time. I know this little stinger bit is more often used for me to make fun of something or some extra sarcastic comment about something in the podcast, but you know what? I'm going to reward you guys that sit and listen to this and get right through to the very, very end of the podcast with a bit of a heads up. You see, between Rocky Horror on the 20th, my singing debut at Lady Marlene's School of Arts recital on the 22nd of March, you can look that up, by the way, and if you are near West End, come along. I'll be singing Tom Jones' Delilah. But don't worry about that, there's actually lots of actual talented people there too. Yeah, well. but then with Netflix launching on the 24th of March, which is the week of the next podcast, as you can imagine, my time to prepare and record for the next podcast is going to be a little on the limited side. So what you'll find is the next podcast is probably going to be pretty lean. Okay, we still love you guys, and we still want to give you everything we can possibly give you, but frankly, I think after the next fortnight, I will probably be rather limited in my ability to stay upright and conscious, let alone record a podcast. I know you guys will understand, and again, I really appreciate you, and especially if you listen all the way to the very end when I'm just rambling on with nothing in particular, on and on and on and on and on and on and on, and pretending it's some sort of bonus for you guys. Yeah. Thanks for listening.